Whether you're the casual hockey observer or the epitome of a rabid Hawks fan, Blackhawks Live answers all your questions.
You know, they obviously turned up the heat on us, and we just kind of clammed up. I didn't think we were moving our feet.
Joe Brand delivers the news, notes, and everyday gossip from the Madhouse on Madison. Here's Joe Brand.
Just 5 games left on the regular season, which means 3 Blackhawks Live, Blackhawks Lives remaining here on WGN Radio. But we're thrilled to bring you the latest edition here tonight. I'm Joe Brand. Our producer is Jack Heinrich. This is Blackhawks Live on 720 WGN. We do this every week, mostly on Mondays, but today, obviously, a Tuesday. Hope you're enjoying that fantastic weather, Chicago. It really has been a nice little burst of energy for everyone. But unfortunately, not a good burst of energy for the Hawks in their last game, which was surprising because it came after one of their most impressive wins of the year. Taking down the Dallas Stars on Saturday, a 3-2 finish, and taking down a team that was rolling, the hottest team in the NHL, an 8-game winning streak. It was a franchise record of their own. And the Dallas Stars gaining a lot of confidence and a lot of momentum over these last couple of weeks, and now making a case for the President's Trophy, and the Blackhawks were able to upset them at the United Center. And we did kind of think that these types of wins were possible because we saw them last year. I brought up the Boston game. I brought up the Pittsburgh game. So it's nice to see that continuation. And also, the Hawks are playing around 500 hockey over the last month. Unfortunately, that's the saving grace of the wins and losses this year. But it's good to see that continuation. And it's also good to see what this team is much more capable of when they're almost fully healthy, and when they are playing some of their best hockey of the year. One of the biggest and best turnarounds lately now has been Lucas Reichel. Looks like moving him down to Rockford was the right move. He has responded well since coming up to the NHL once again. It's not a finished product, but he's showing a lot of great glimpses of what made him so successful towards the end of last year and when he was really rolling in Rockford. If you didn't catch Saturday's game, there was a play where he's driving into the crease. He's trying to cut 2 defensemen of Dallas. And he ends up drawing a penalty. He goes down to his knees, but he hangs on to the play. And he passes it back to Andreas Athanasiou. Athanasiou scores his first goal of the year. But there were just so many great things in that play for Lucas Reichel compared to the rest of the season. He had the audacity to go into the slot, despite there being 2 Stars players, use a little bit of his puck handling skills, not be afraid of that contact, not be afraid of that just combat. And even if they don't set up the goal, he draws a penalty. Again, it's not a finished product. Lucas Reichel still has other things he'd like to improve on, but he has been pleased with his play, not, again, satisfied, but pleased. And towards the end of the last game on Sunday, Luke Richardson had to start mixing up the lines a little bit because the offense just was not clicking. And he put Lucas Reichel on the same line with Connor Bedard and Filip Kurashev, which we saw a little bit earlier this year. It didn't have much success, but it sounds like Luke's going to roll with it for the game tomorrow against the St. Louis Blues, and Lucas Reichel is ready to get reunited with Connor Bedard and Filip Kurashev.
Of course, you're two really good skilled players. But my focus, like being good defensively, and of course I want to score, but you know, we all more offensive guys, so we got to look defensively, and if we're good in the D zone, we get our chances in the O zone.
Lucas Reichel has credited his defensive game for helping the overall flow of his offensive game. And you often hear that from players. Reichel was even saying today after practice that just being more physical during practice can help translate into the game, bring your focus to your defensive side of your game, and then the offensive game will just come a little bit more naturally. I do think that's what we're seeing with Lucas Reichel. But I do think it will be a good challenge to see how he fares once again with Connor Bedard and Filip Kuryshev. Again, there wasn't much success with them earlier this year, but that's Reichel speaking. I mean, or speaking of Reichel, because Bedard and Kuryshev had a ton of chemistry, but Reichel's year was off to such a rocky start. He was moved to that top line. It didn't really work out, but now it's a different player this year of Lucas Reichel. But again, it goes back to that defensive burst of play from him. Because one of the main criticisms of that line was, well, nobody was going to get the puck. It's too many offensively skilled players. And don't get me wrong, they've got a ton of talent. They know how to go and get the puck and win battles, and Connor Bedard has definitely shown that. But it's almost like maybe there needs to be one guy who that is their specific job. Not every play, not every sequence, but maybe it flows a little bit better, and I think that is why we saw more success with Nick Foligno and Jason Dickinson in those roles. But Luke Richardson, again, probably sticking with that same top line tomorrow in St. Louis, thinks that Reichel rejoining those guys, bringing that more defensive mindset, can be good for all three of them.
Yeah, and I think just more determined to keep pucks and get pucks. And even today in practice, stole a few pucks. I think he's just feeling confident, more confident in his game as well. And sometimes that shows in the physical battles, not just goals and assists. And I think that's a good thing for him to have second effort battles, just like on that goal by AA the other day that he created. We need more of that from him, and he needs more of that from him himself, because that'll allow him to have the puck more, and I think that's advantageous to him and our team.
With that increase in his defensive game, is that kind of a challenge responsibly for him on that top line where he has to be kind of the guy that goes against the puck more?
Yeah, him and you know, all three of them, really. I thought I liked them in the forecheck drill today at the end of practice, and they realize that if they're in there and they're hard before the D can turn around and make a play, that's the time to strip pucks and with their speed get away from people and make things work. So Reichs has got just as much responsibility as the other two. It depends who's in first and who's the high forward. And, you know, I think at times all three of them will probably have that role in both ends of the rink.
And now that Bedard is playing with Reichel and Kuryshev, that means he got to learn German now?
He might. I've heard them speak together a little bit, so he might have to learn a few, at least swear words, if he's not happy.
Yeah, that was the running joke last year, that Andreas Athanasiou was feeling left out because Lucas Reichel and Filip Kuryshev were able to communicate in German, and those three were finding a lot of chemistry on that line, and now apparently Connor Bedard might be the odd one out. Of all the things that Connor Bedard can do, unfortunately, I don't think speaking German is one of them, but I'll be interested to see how that line fares tomorrow in St. Louis. I think it was the last show, or at least one of the post-game shows, we were talking about hopefully there being so much success with Jason Dickinson on that line that they can maybe ride out the rest of the year with Dickinson on that top line. But, you know, sometimes this is still good for the to get a better idea of what Luke Richardson can do with his pieces next year. And I think there is going to be a lot of that in these last few games. There might be some tinkering around and shuffling players and seeing what works to maybe get a better idea of what might work next year. More on tomorrow night's game in St. Louis. The Hawks are going to be without Nick Foligno. He's dealing with a personal matter. So Taylor Radish will rejoin the lineup. He had been out the last couple of games as a healthy scratch. Radish still without a goal since December in Seattle. It's been quite the drought for him. So hopefully he can find one in the back of the net before the year comes to an end. And with all the good news of Connor Murphy, he's still not able to play, or I should say, the Hawks aren't playing him tomorrow. However, he is going to be on the trip, and they are hoping he can return on Friday. Connor Murphy dealing with a whole heck of a lot of things, but dealing with the same type of injury as Logan Couture, and after a long setback that I don't think he was expecting to be as long as it was, definitely making sure he finishes this year with a few games under his belt, and he's definitely mindful of getting that done. And again, it looks like hopefully Friday, by then there will be four games left, so maybe he can finish out the rest of the year. We've still got more to get to, but actually right now it's time for Cue the Shot, which is brought to you by Curveball Whiskey.
Here's Kurashev along the goal line, working around Wedgwood's net up to the near side. Bedard in the near point, works down the near wall from the near circles, shoots and scores! Connor Bedard sniping it from the circle, capitalizes on the Blackhawks power play, and the Hawks lead 1-0.
That is Cue the Shot, brought to you by Curveball. That's Curveball with a K, the original barbecue whiskey. Join the Bonehead Nation today at curveballwhiskey.com. That was an important goal. The Hawks getting it on the power play, starting a trend of three straight goals against the Dallas Stars, and really just kind of putting them in the corner. Dallas picked up a goal before the end of that second period, but it just helped give the Hawks a lot of momentum. They were able to play with that lead and finish off a 3-2 win on Saturday. Again, probably, I would say, the most impressive win for the Hawks this year, considering who they were facing, when they were facing them, and just how they were able to get things done. Obviously, another stellar outing by Peter Mrazek, 42 saves in that game. Our guest this week is Dante DiCaria. He was and is the Regina Pats broadcaster who got a firsthand look of Connor Bedard's growth, success, and just rise in the Western Hockey League. Obviously, hockey nuts probably knew of Connor Bedard before he became a Regina Pat, but all of the audience, all of the following that you see here in the States at the NHL level, it was still brewing when he was with the Western Hockey League. We're going to talk with Dante DiCaria after the 7:30 news. We do have to get to a break, but want to get to some more stuff. The Blackhawks' latest Every Shift episode is out, and news from Joel Quenneville, chatting for the first time publicly in quite a bit of time. Blackhawks Live next, 720 WGN. Blackhawks Live on 720 WGN. Hawks are in St. Louis tomorrow. I actually think they're in St. Louis right now. They traveled after practice. They'll be back home this upcoming weekend. Just two home games left at the United Center. Friday night against the Nashville Predators. Sunday against the Carolina Hurricanes. And then two road games to wrap up the year in Vegas and in L.A. I imagine both those teams will be fighting for the playoffs. So it's going to be quite the finish for the Hawks on the regular season. This is always a tough topic to bring up, but I think out of respect to Kyle Beach and also out of respect to the way the Blackhawks have made an effort to change things and make things right, Joel Quenneville did chat on the Cam and Strick podcast. First time he's talked publicly since being relieved of his duties from the Florida Panthers, although I can't remember exactly what the terminology was, and I think it may have been that Joel Quenneville stepped away. Either way, it's a pretty serious and intense conversation, as it should be, but Quenneville basically goes down the timeline of everything that had happened, and the main thing I took from it was it does hold consistent to what was reported from the Block and Jenner report. And again, if you're not entirely sure what we're talking about, a Blackhawks player back in 2010 by the name of Kyle Beach was sexually abused by one of the coaches during that Stanley Cup run, and it had not been brought to light until a couple of years ago in the summer of 2021. And Joel Quenneville continues to say that he didn't know about sexual abuse or sexual assault until that summer of 2021. He confirms he was in the meeting that had happened right after the Hawks had won the Western Conference Final against the San Jose Sharks, again, which continues consistently with the Block and Jenner report, but didn't know of the whereabouts of what the video coach Brad Aldridge had done. He had heard that Brad Aldridge had been hanging around with some of the Rockford players, going out to a few bars, and according to Joel Quenneville, that is all he heard about. He was very adamant about how he could have done more, how he could have asked more questions. I think he used the phrase, I could have pushed the right buttons to bring to light exactly what had happened and made it right and done right by Kyle Beach. So he does take blame for that. He often says, I'm not going to blame anyone else. I could have done more. And just another thing that caught my mind of it when listening to it again on the Cam and Strict podcast, saying that he never heard about the matter from John McDonough or anyone else of the Blackhawks regime after the video coach, Brad Aldridge, had been let go. Again, that's Joel Quenneville speaking publicly on the Cam and Strick podcast for the first time since leaving as head coach of the Florida Panthers. And again, never an easy topic to cover, but I think it's important that we do just bring to light the latest of it. The Blackhawks' newest episode of Every Shift is out on YouTube. I just caught a couple of pieces of it, all about the new young talent coming through this organization right now. There's a lot about Connor Bedard and Kevin Korchinski participating in gym classes with some young schools, Oliver Moore and Sam Renzel over in Minnesota and working their way up to an NHL career. They highlight Landon Slaggart's NHL debut and focus in on Alex Vlasic and Kevin Korchinski, I think, living together, playing the guitar and just generating a lot of chemistry. Again, that's the latest Every Shift episode on the Blackhawks YouTube page. I believe there's going to be a couple episodes out before the season comes to an end. Mentioned earlier, our guest this week is Dante DiCario. He's the voice of the Regina Pats, which is Connor Bedard's junior hockey team up in Canada. I actually have a little bit of a background with Dante. We have some of the same baseball roots, calling games in the same league, in the Midwest League. He was with the Lansing Lugnuts and with the Kane County Cougars. But I met Dante at the NHL draft, and it right away you got to see a relationship that he and Connor Bedard have, because Dante was, again, around every game, around every bus ride, so he can shed a little bit light on who Connor Bedard was before he came to Chicago, after David Jennings News from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.
Welcome back to Blackhawks Live here on WGN Radio. I'm Joe Brand, and we're joined by Dante DiCario, who has gotten a very in-depth look at Connor Bedard over his instrumental years with the Regina Pats. He was their broadcaster, still is the broadcaster. And Dante, thank you very much for joining us.
Joe, it's a pleasure to be here in Chicago and just be around the team, and thank you so much for having me.
Hey, pleasure's all ours. What's one thing about Connor Bedard that people might not know?
I think a lot of people probably know this, but I think the one thing that's not talked about enough, I think, and it's something that I tried to talk about the most when I was, you know, doing a lot of interviews when he was playing for the Regina Pats. I always wanted to talk to the media whenever I was asked by Chicago media or other media outlets, say Montreal or Toronto. I'd always say, okay, talk to the coaches about what he is on the ice. I want to talk about the person that he is off the ice, because to me, that needs to be talked about a lot. And he is, to me, one of the classiest people you could ever meet. And at a young age, to me, that's just incredibly remarkable. And maybe it's something that you already know, Joe, just from being around him. Obviously, I had the opportunity to be around him a little bit more than, you know, the average media person, and just being on the bus all the time and being at events with him and stuff like that. But just the way he treats people is just incredible. To have that kind of respect at that age is just remarkable. He's meant a lot to me in my life. He's been like a brother to me. He's been a huge supporter of not only me as a person, but my career as well, and my craft as I, you know, look to climb up the ranks. So I don't know, it's kind of maybe a basic answer there, Joe, but like the one thing about him is like he's just so respectful to his teammates. He cares about people. If you're very close to him, he'll go out of his way to try to make your day better. I mean, there were times with the Regina Pats where I was going about my business and he would notice that maybe I didn't have a smile on my face or something like that, and he would kind of chase after me down the hall and say, hey, what's wrong today, you know? And I was, you know, a little bit frustrated with maybe this or that. And there was one time that I actually got in a car accident, and it wasn't a bad car accident, but it was kind of a little bit of a bender, and I backed up in one of the coach's cars and my whole bumper had to be replaced and stuff like that. And I was so frustrated and everybody was ripping me at the rink, and he had heard about it, and he was like the only kid that on the team that wasn't like laughing at me. Like he saw how upset I was about what had happened. And, you know, he chased me down into the media room, put his arm around me and was like, hey, Dante, you know, the one thing that matters is that you're okay. The car can be fixed. Don't worry about it. Brush it off. It happens to the best of us. So that's one little, I guess, story that I can share with you. Just a fantastic person when you really get to know the kid.
What was the coach's reaction to that?
You know, it was actually our assistant coach, Ken Schneider. And Ken Schneider is like one of the nicest guys you could ever meet. And he was blaming himself, saying that I shouldn't have parked in the handicap spot because I had just backed out and I didn't really realize where I'm going. And then I just smashed right into his tail, I guess. I don't know what it's exactly called, but it was like the back of his truck. and it did some damage. It was like minus 41 in Regina that day, so it didn't take much to do the damage, and I actually just got it fixed over the Christmas break, thankfully, because it was really bothering me, and I had to drive with that over the last year or so. But yeah, he actually wasn't upset at all, but I've become a little bit of a better driver since.
Oh, that's good. That's good to hear. I guess you can credit Connor Bedard for that, too, yes, for making you a little bit more at ease behind the wheel. Everyone has been so impressed with what he's able to do at the NHL level at 18 years old. When he was in Regina, what was one of the more remarkable things you saw on the ice from him?
Like, I think everybody's been asking him, you know, are you a playmaker now? I've seen a lot of the interviews and the scrums that you guys have done with him in the room. I think his playmaking ability has always been there. And just the ability to see guys, like, just to find guys with no space where you think he wouldn't be able to find was always so remarkable. Like, everybody knows about his shot and everybody talks about his shot, and he would just score from all areas. He would just be able to walk into the slot area by himself and just shoot the puck on net, and it would usually go in the net. I mean, he scored 71 goals, but he also had more assists than he had goals last year with the Regina Pats. And I think his playmaking ability is very underrated, and he's always been a really good playmaker. He sees the ice extremely well. He's one step ahead of the defender. He's one step ahead of the play. I think, obviously, with the Hawks, you know, kind of different lines that he's been playing on, different players that he's been playing on. But I think once you get guys that think the game at his level, he's not only going to make them much better, but he's also going to make himself a lot better, because more pucks are going to go in the back of the net. There's going to be more points for him. Like, I think he's just going to be a perennial 100-point guy for years to come. But yeah, I think just the ability to find guys in different areas was always something that really impressed me. But the thing that I always took in the most was just watching the way he worked after practice and stuff like that. Like, he was always out there with the same guys, Tanner Howe, Alexander Suzdalev, Stanislas Vozel, all drafted guys, and they would be on the ice until the Zamboni would have to kick them off. You guys have seen that here with the Blackhawks here at Fifth Third Arena. So that was probably the one thing that stood out to me the most. Like, his work ethic is just incredible. He's the only guy that will be here on an off day, putting in the work. He takes care of his body like it's, you know, it's, well, it's like a machine, right? It's like the way you have to take care of your car, right? And he treats his body like a temple. He's a pro's pro. It's incredible.
It's interesting you bring up about finding his teammates and all that, because that was one thing I talked about with his dad, and he said that when he was a kid, obviously the skill level was there and it was above everyone else's, but he was still trying to find his teammates, and that wasn't the best way to score. The best way to score was for him to shoot the puck. Then he got a little bit older, his teammates started to get better as well, and that part of the game just translated completely.
Yeah, Joe, I think I'm happy you brought that up, because I think that just stems back to just who he is as a person, like what I previously answered in your first question to me. He wants to see his teammates succeed. He's more excited for his teammates to put the puck in the back of the net than he is for himself, right? And I think that goes along with where that playmaking comes from, Joe. And to me, that's what just makes him such a remarkable player, but just such a special person as well, because he's so excited to see his teammates put the puck in the back of the net. He's excited to see his teammates score. He's excited to see them happy, right? And that's just another example on what makes him just a special person and a special player. I think that's where his playmaking ability comes from, because growing up as a kid, he's not someone who wants the spotlight to be on him. He loves to kind of see other people get credit, other people get recognition, you know, from the fan base, from the media, from you guys. So that's just the kind of person he is. But it's hard to describe him as a player, because he just does so many things right that just kind of blows your socks off, right?
Talking with Dante DiCaria here on Blackhawks Live. A few more questions as he was Connor Bedard's broadcaster at the Regina Pats. You've got some baseball experience as well, and you're molding the young baseball minds of Canada. How's that going?
It's quite interesting. I mean, going from baseball broadcasting to coaching has been a treat for me. You and I were talking about it off mic, and I always had an interest in coaching, but I have to thank, like, all the baseball minds that I've been around over the years. I mean, obviously, you were in the Midwest League for many years, and you had the opportunity to be around some really good coaches. And, you know, with the Lansing Lugnuts, I learned so much from, whether it was the Blue Jays roving coaches or just the coaches that they had there in general. And I just remember, you know, Cesar Martin being the manager there, and just being able to go in the locker room or in the room and just kind of talk to them and just learn from them and stuff like that. And that's where a lot of my baseball knowledge has come from. over the years, you know, just being able to kind of soak all that stuff in. And even Jesse Goldberg-Strassler, who's been a big mentor to me, he's the voice of the Lansing Lugnuts, and he knows so much about baseball. And he would always, you know, take me down to batting practice, and we'd sit behind the cage, and we would just close our eyes and just kind of visualize what was happening just by using our ears for how the ball was hit. And we'd always play like a game where, you know, in batting practice, you would hit the ball and we would call it. For example, you know, whether it was a fly ball to right, or if it was in on the hands, or if it was off the end of the back, or it was a line drive, and then we would see who was right. And like for me as a coach, that's been so helpful, because when I'm throwing batting practice, right, or I'm watching the kids hit balls, I kind of know, you know, where they're hitting the ball and stuff like that, just because of that technique that Jesse taught me. So a lot of what I learned as a baseball broadcaster has really benefited me as a coach, and I'm still learning. And thankfully, I have so many contacts in baseball that I can call. You know, I, you know, text some of the guys that I broadcasted, ask them questions, whether it's a catcher, a first baseman, or an outfielder, to say, hey, how do you do this? What are some different drills that you've done in the past that I could help with my kids? And they're always helpful to just give me advice in those ways and stuff like that. Even coaches that I've had and been able to work with over the years as well.
Dante DiCaria, thanks for doing this. Best of luck the rest of the way, and welcome to Chicago.
Yeah, looking forward to coming back. Thanks for so much for having me.
We'll have more at Blackhawks Live, 720 WGN.
It's our last stop on Blackhawks Live, 720 WGN. 5 games left on the regular season, 2 home games left. 2 more chances to see the Hawks at the UC. Our producer is Jack Heinrich, and we give him the floor for this last segment. Just a few more shows left, Jack. This year really flew by again.
I know. I'm sad. I think we have like 2 after this one, but it really did fly. I feel like we're just getting started the other day.
You're going to make me cry.
I know. I'm getting choked up in here. You hear that?
Yeah. What do you got for us?
What do I got? All right. So this was something I saw last night, and then I looked in a little bit more. Have you heard about Landon DuPont?
No.
He's 15 years old, but he got he was granted exceptional status to start playing in the WHL next year as a 15-year-old. He was the number one pick in the draft this year as a 14-year-old, and he's turning 15 next year. But he got granted this exceptional status so he can play more than 5 games. So he can play the whole year next year, and this makes him 2027 NHL draft eligible. And Connor Bedard had this happen to him, too, when he went to juniors.
Right.
So they're the only two in the WHL that's had that happen. I think it says here in this article on NHL.com, he's the 9th player to ever get it for junior, but he's the 2nd one to get it in the WHL. So just something interesting. I thought he's 15, a defenseman, and he's now eligible for the 2027 draft, which I just think it's crazy that this kid is that good. He'd go pro at such a young age.
Yeah, just a quick skim of the headline from The Athletic, why Landon DuPont was granted exceptional status into the WHL, quote, no-brainer. Wow, no, I didn't know about that. And yeah, obviously the relevance matching with Connor Bedard. We were talking while the interview was being played that the one story I didn't get a chance to bring up, but I think I have on the airwaves before. Mm-hmm. Just Bedard's impact in the WHL, again, I was in Calgary last year on one of the road trips, and the game we did, I think it was a Saturday night, too.
Yeah.
Decent crowd, wasn't completely filled, though. Maybe, you know, 18 of 20,000 that the Scotiabank Arena holds. The next day, the Regina Pats were playing the Calgary Wranglers. That game sold out. So Connor Bedard's game, when he was in the WHL, sold out, but the NHL game for the home team the night before did not sell out. Just goes to show you his impact, and maybe Landon DuPont's too.
Yeah,
that's a good one.
Yeah. So Bedard, I mean, it just shows just the hype he's had and how he succeeded. But he also did have a message for Landon, since they're the only two in the WHL.
Hey, Landon, just want to say congratulations on getting exceptional status. You should be super proud of yourself. It's a huge honor. Your time in the WHL is going to be some of the best of your life, so I'm super excited to follow you and hopefully play against you soon. Congratulations.
So yeah, they got Connor Bedard to say that too, which I thought was cool, and it's also just kind of my reading ability. I read it, I thought it just said he got an exception, and then I listened to this and he said exceptional. I'm like, oh, that makes more sense. But
well, no, what I was going to say is, I mean, there's something so significant about exceptional status.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds like you're being knighted almost. And, I mean, in Canada, being given exceptional status to play hockey at a higher league that the age you're expected to, I mean, I'm sure it is kind of parallel to being knighted.
Yeah.
But, I remember it being exceptional status with Connor Bedard.
Right.
But, again, it just seems so eloquent.
I know. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a big deal. I mean, I saw Connor McDavid's another one that's gotten that before, but in a different league. So, I mean,
he was with the Erie Otters.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, that just shows, I guess,
we
look forward to him, watching him as well. Cause I mean, he's got to be pretty good if he's getting this.
Yeah.
Next, going to a legend now. Last week, Sidney Crosby clinched a point per game for the 19th season.
Saw that.
It's only him and Wayne Gretzky. That's it for 19 straight.
So I don't mean to totally pivot away from what you just brought up, but watching last week the Stars and Oilers game, Connor McDavid, he might have already eclipsed it. I don't know if he's got 100 assists yet or not, but he's going to get it. He was at like 97 with a few games left. He's going to join just three other players that have 100 assists in a season. Wayne Gretzky, Mario Lemieux, and Bobby Orr.
Wow.
Wayne Gretzky did it 11 times. Mario Lemieux did it once. Bobby Orr did it once. Connor McDavid's going to do it for the first time. Wayne Gretzky did it 11 times.
That reminds me of like the Michael Jordan stats. They're like, DeMar DeRozan won his eighth player of the week. He's second behind Michael Jordan, who has 65. You know, that just reminds me. That shows you just how great those guys are.
And Jay Zawoski of CHGO always brings this one up, but I believe it's if you take away Wayne Gretzky's goals, his assists,
yeah, I think I saw that,
still lead the NHL's history in total points.
Yeah,
like that just goes to show you what type of player and what type of point producer he was.
Yeah, that's crazy. And I just looked up, McDavid's at 99, so he's
okay. He's going to get it.
Knocking right on the door.
Did I cut off your Sidney Crosby comment, or did you have more to it?
No, that was just about it.
Yeah,
about
I mean,
how great he is.
The point per game, well, the other cool thing about that is he did it his first year in the league.
Yeah.
So 18 years ago he did it, his first year in the league, and now he's having this remarkable season. Unfortunately, Pittsburgh fighting for their playoff lives.
He's trying to drag them in right here at the end.
But, I mean, it's almost like the Taves situation where, like, what more can you do that's going to be just remarkable? But I tell you what, Crosby, who, you know, Taves and Crosby will always be compared throughout the years because of all their success, all their leadership kind of being at the same time. They both end with three cups. I mean, these types of things, I'm guessing, are what gets down to the nitty-gritty of the difference between Crosby and Taves. And even though Taves alone, a generational player and a generational talent, but it's just those guys are just wired to be great, and that's it. Nothing else.
Yeah, I mean, that's just what stuck out to me. 19 straight, and then great comparison there between the two. And then the last one, did you see that line fight last week?
Oh,
Rangers and the
Darren
Devils?
Pang was calling it.
Yeah,
he was right
in the middle of the two coaches yelling at each other. But I just thought that was crazy. 8 ejections. I didn't know if you started a fight after the original one, you get ejected for it. So yeah, this is from Dan Rosen on Twitter. The first period had 2 goals, 19 shots on goal, 27 penalties, 162 penalty minutes, 12 fighting majors, 8 missed game conducts, 110 misconduct, and then 1 failed offside challenge. So just everything you need in that first period. I just thought it was awesome.
That is Jack Heinrich. That was Jack's last thoughts. I'm Joe Brand. Big thanks to Dante DiCaria. Big thanks to the Blackhawks. We will talk to you next week, but we'll also talk to you tomorrow night. Hawks are in St. Louis. Have a great night. David Jennings has your news next, though, and stick around for John Landecker, which comes next.